Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Relationships, love, and sex, the spices of life, driving us all and commanding the wheel, is the media darling in the complex world of human behavior. Expert therapist, author, and radio host, Dr. Jane Greer. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy this fast-moving ride with fascinating guests. HealthyLife.net welcomes you to the Doctor on Call Hour with Dr. Jane Greer.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at HealthyLife.net. Well, in honor of Valentine's Day, which is right around the corner, we're going to be speaking to the experts in love. Our guests are going to share invaluable insights on nurturing relationships and maintaining emotional well-being during this season of love. First, on Let's Talk Sex, we're going to be talking with Dr. Sarah Nazarazdeh, an award-winning author, speaker, and thinking partner with a PhD in social psychology. Dr. Sarah is renowned for her impactful work in sexuality, relationships, and intercultural fluency. With over 500 keynote addresses and workshops globally, she's been a cultural advisor for governments, NGOs, Fortune 500 companies, and more. Dr. Sarah's latest book, Love by Design, Six Ingredients for a Lifetime of Love, draws from a decade of research with couples that's offering a groundbreaking perspective on relationships. And Dr. Sarah, I have the pleasure of saying you are a dear friend of mine. I'm so delighted to have you here to talk with you.
It's wonderful to be in conversation with you on the phone, in person, anywhere.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, now let's just dive right in. Your new book is coming out tomorrow. And it's called Love by Design, Six Ingredients to Build a Lifetime of Love. How exciting. And let's all learn more about the book. In your book, you challenge the conventional idea of finding one's other half and emphasize the importance of cultivating core relational ingredients. So how do individuals and couples shift their mindset away from the traditional notion that love is finding your soulmate, the other one, and embrace your emergent love model? Let's talk about that, and then how do they shift into it?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I would like to warn people that after our conversation, and hopefully after you read the book or listen to the book, your perception about love will not be the same as before. So it's a good warning. So expect that your whole perspective shifts. The reason
that's a red alert for the heart.
Yes. So because Dr. Jane, one of the things that is very important for me for people to take away from our conversation is love supposed to give your heart a break, not break your heart. So that's one of the myths.
Right.
That we were taught, right, that if you fall in love with somebody, it hurts, it aches, it has to break your heart. So basically, many of us grew up with this idea of finding the other one, or the better half, or whatever that we call it, right? So the idea is 1 + 1 = 1.
Right.
One soul in two bodies.
Right.
Right? So
right.
That
exactly
I call
right.
Submergent, right? Submergent love. But in this model, what I would love to introduce people to is emergent love, which is completely evidence-informed based on systems thinking and years of research based on relational science research, that now I would like to propose to people, think about it as 1 + 1 = 3. And that third element can only exist if these two people in the relationship interact with one another and in constant exchange of six key ingredients which are non-negotiable. So basically, if you really think about it, if you have a spark and log, bring them together in a conducive context, you're going to have a burning, beautiful, warm fire. But if at any point, if you take the oxygen away, or the log away, or the spark away, the fire dies. That is the analogy that I would like people to take away from our conversation when they think about love moving forward.
I think that's so brilliant because, you know, what it sounds like you've crafted is 1 + 1 = 3, and you have each person that has to contribute to the marriage, which is the 3, or the relationship, which is the 3. And the relationship has a certain entity in life separate from each individual person's unique needs. And, you know, when each partner recognizes that the relationship is more than you individually, you start to invest in it in a different way. And I'm so eager to hear your 6 ingredients for doing so.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is very important is the reciprocal nature of all of these ingredients. So, for example, a lot of people come to our offices and say, I don't feel respected by my partner. And I ask them, are you respected by yourself? Are you respectful? So, you know, the lens can't be on me or you. It has to be really reciprocal at all times. Now, the ingredients are in no particular order, are respect, attraction, trust, vision, which is for yourself, and the shared vision, compassion, and acts of loving. And each of these, if we have time, we can go through them, and I can, because, you know, the words people have heard before, but the way that we define them based on our research with hundreds of couples who identified as thriving in their long-term relationships, the definitions are nuanced and a little bit different than people might think about when they hear this terminology.
So I would love to go through them with you, and I would love to start with respect because I find that so compelling, and what you say to people, well, do you respect yourself? Can we look up close and personal at what respect is and how it translates behaviorally? And I say this because as I've over the years, similar to yourself, have dealt with many, many, many couples, falling in love, working on their love, and wanting to evict their love and move out and get divorced. And inevitably, I will always say to the person who has reached the breaking point where they've said, you know, enough is enough, I can't do this relationship, I can't do this marriage anymore, and I will say to them, why now? What did it for you? What was the breaking point? And Dr. Sarah, it's so intriguing because almost everybody would say to me, I lost respect for the person. And that seemed to be the line in the sand, when they were no longer able to muster up any element of respect, the relationship was, you know, null and void. So let's talk about respect. When you say, you know, you must respect yourself, what does that look like? And how does that then translate into being respectful and loving in a reciprocal way, as you're describing, to your partner?
Sure. So the example that you gave is actually brilliant because that's a good segue for us to start this conversation. Respect is not
Thank
a part
you.
Of the discourse, of course, when we're talking about individualistic societies specifically, because it's all about me, how I feel, how I do things, right? So one of the things that I would like to discuss about respect is how do you prioritize your boundaries without becoming a narcissist? Because there is this motto of I call it acquired narcissism, that we shut other people out in the name of I'm respecting my boundary. Boundaries are only good as a form of invitation for other people. So you know yourself, you respect your own boundaries lovingly and firmly, and respect the other person's boundaries lovingly and firmly. So in a way, boundaries are not borders to shut people out, but boundaries are invitations for other people how to be around you, how to show up for you. So respect is how... Yes.
No, I was going to say, I love that. I love what you're describing. And can you exemplify? Can you give an example? Because, I think the word boundaries is a word that we all hear, and it becomes confusing for people because you're exactly right. They think that by declaring what they're going to do, what they're going to do, that that's their boundary. And it's so much more complex than that, and people grapple and struggle with knowing when, where, and how to implement a boundary. Can you give us an example?
Absolutely. So boundaries are one aspect of respect, right? They could be also as simple as mannerism around each other, or prioritizing each other's needs and then following through. But going back to boundaries and giving examples, so imagine that we have four resources, as I describe in the book, time, energy, attention, and money, right? These are the resources that usually we don't have endless amount of. When we are prioritizing those for ourselves, and then based on what we can give, what we can receive, the quality of it, the quantity of it, these become the north star, so to speak, as how we are going to put down our boundaries. If I say that I'm tired, but still I push myself to the point that just give, without really respecting my own boundaries, my own resources, then the other people around us, including our partners, learn that, you know what, this person is not even respecting their own boundaries. Let me just push them as far as I can too. Right?
Meaning that they'll take advantage of them. But what about when people, I think it's so so wise the way you've structured and conceptualized the resources that we have available, the time, the money, the energy, and prioritizing them. Yet I find, and I wonder if you've encountered this, that people struggle with their self-esteem, that they grapple with being able to respect themselves because they feel not good enough, or like they're being a bad partner or a bad husband or wife or a bad friend if they're not giving excessively. And so the self-esteem worms its way into being able to respect themselves. How do you tackle that?
Right. So thank you for this brilliant question, because one of the chapters of the book, chapter 3 actually, is called What We Bring to Love.
Oh, I love it.
To answer this question that you just posed, we need to know what we are made of. What is our connection style? What is our thinking style? So know the critical aspects of ourselves, multiple identities that we hold, what matters to us, the vision, all of those. And I know that people have heard about some of these before. So, for example, where are you going in life, right? But what I wanted to offer more than that was not only the literacy, but the fluency in which people carry on this self-knowledge about themselves. So, for example, when we talk about how to prioritize, you're talking about self-esteem. Self-esteem comes from the idea of self. We have multitudes of research to differentiate between the self that you perceive, the self that was imposed on you, and the self that you put out there to the world, right? So
right.
The multitude of selves that we have. So what I'm trying to do in this book, Love by Design, is to help people get to know that self. So one of the exercises that I give them is, what are you made of? And I call it essences. You need to know what your essences are so that those are the guiding principles within you. You're not waiting for other people to define you or refine you. And based on those, you can only put down the boundaries that are meaningful to you. And then because you believe in them, they are core parts of you, you're going to show up for them and lovingly and firmly communicate around your resources and priorities.
Well, talk about brilliant. That makes so much sense and is so viable for people to be able to adapt and incorporate for their own well-being and the well-being of the relationship. So, but I also must ask you, you know, your book also suggests a shift from the traditional pursuit of the romantic butterfly, which we all, hopefully we have at least a butterfly at the beginning of a relationship, you know, if not several butterflies or a lot of butterflies. But people then think or expect that they're going to have that passion and intensity and excitement and butterflies throughout the relationship, and feel that the relationship somehow is simmering or turned cold or lackluster or missing when they don't have it. So how do you address the lack of constant excitement or passion? And at what point does it indicate that there could be a problem in the relationship? In other words, what's the balance in the healthy norm? And when is it time to start to take out the polish and polish things up?
Sure. So thank you for that. I think we are actually moving from respect to attraction now. So one of the things that, I introduce people to in the book based on our research again. So sexual chemistry, that dazzling and butterflies and feeling the physical and visceral draw to the other person in a sexual way, that is, evolutionary speaking, to bring two people together to create cute and healthy babies with diverse genes, right? But then in a long-term partnership, as you know, many of us know who have been in long-term partnerships, where the sex life also is healthy, we know that physical attraction is actually very important. Sexual chemistry is very primally organized, so it's based on those genes that I spoke about, right? And sometimes even you hear people talk about, oh my God, I can't get my hands off of him, or I can't be without them. But then at the same time, they're talking about, but you know, I'm surprised because she's not even my type. So that's sexual chemistry, right? In the book, I talk about more than sexual attraction to a person, more than sexual chemistry. We have different types of attraction, financial, social, intellectual. These days, it's a very, very big one, for example, right? But the initial draw is very good, whether you have it based on that very strong draw or not. But if that is the only reason that you are getting together with somebody and you're committing to build a life with them, I would actually caution against it. Because if other factors are not there, then somewhere down the line, again, research shows that within an average of 2 years, that is inevitably going to go away. And when it fizzles out, then you're left with a person that I love them, but I'm not in love with them, right? And then the other characteristics will show up that are not really conducive to a good relationship that could lead to that emergent love. And also, I introduce people to the concept of moving from sexual chemistry to sexual harmony, which means moving from that sharp orange color butterfly to create intimacy. Into me I see, and into me you see, which is an evolving process over time to lead to being attuned with the other person and create sexual harmony for a more meaningful and fulfilling sexual connection with someone.
Well, I think that's a stroke of genius. And let me tell you why. A couple of thoughts come to mind as you're talking. The first thing being that the attraction and the chemistry, you know, where you align for social or financial reasons, it sounds like you've made the distinction, and I just want to clarify if this is what you're referencing. It's like the distinction between an attraction and or the transactional relationship, where people get into it because somebody's bringing one, you know, good stuff to the party, they've got the money, and the other person's bringing their social connections, and they, you know, they sort of, you know, pool their resources, but they're lacking some of the other elements. Is that kind of what you're referencing? You know, the more transactional?
Yes, and with the transactional also, it's okay as long as people know what they're attracted to. Because that's another thing, you know, when writing a book about love is as if you're bringing something divine and sacred down and try to analyze and dissect it, and many people don't like it, right?
Right,
so,
right.
And if people think about, you know what, I'm attracted to money, that's okay, good for you, but then years later, please don't come to my office and say that, well, you know, we don't have hot sex. That was never a part of the conversation.
Right, right.
So, as long as
in other words, know what you're getting into. Exactly.
Exactly. Terrific. As long as they know what they're attracted to, what they want to be around. Because, you know, attraction, the way that I define it is things that draw you to other people. And there are so many different research that I quote in the book about reciprocity of liking. Like if you know somebody likes you, you like them back. If you know somebody
right.
has something that resonates with you, with your default, with your blueprint where you grew up, you might be attracted to it. So, you know, these
right.
are the things that people, I just would love for people to be more intentional around this whole concept of creating love rather than falling into it.
Right. All right. So let's circle back to what you were saying a moment ago about being in love, and I love my partner, but I'm not in love with him. I that is so critical. And you know what? You're going to have to come back because it is so critical, and yet we are out of time. And so with that being said, I want to thank you. I can't believe we're out of time. How are we out of time so quickly? Dr. Sarah, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Your new book sounds just incredible. The title, everybody, is called, tell us, Dr. Sarah.
So, Love by Design, 6 Ingredients to Build a Lifetime of Love.
Fantastic. And everybody, you can learn more about Dr. Sarah and her new book at lovebydesignbook.com. Stay with us. In a minute, we're going to be back for more of Let's Talk Sex here at HealthyLife.net. And I'm Dr. Greer, and I'll be back with you.
How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you are trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then How Could You Do This to Me and What About Me are the titles of 2 separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me or What About Me by Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person. Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com. The positive side of podcasts. Always have been, always will be. Uncensored, entertaining, timeless talk. HRNpodcast.com. Take a break from the dark side.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Let's Talk Sex. I'm glad we have more time. I thought we ran out of time there. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and I'm here with Elisa DiLorenzo from One Extraordinary Marriage. We were talking in the first segment about relationships, how to make them the best that they can possibly be with Dr. Sarah Nasrudis. And now we're going to be talking with Elisa DiLorenzo. She's joining us. She's a dynamic force in the field of marriage and intimacy. Together with her husband, Tony, Elisa co-founded One Extraordinary Marriage, a platform dedicated to sharing insights, experiences, and practical advice to empower couples in strengthening their marriages and fostering extraordinary relationships. Through their renowned 60 Days of Sex Challenge and sponsorship of 7 Days of Sex Challenges, Elisa has become a beacon of wisdom on the importance of intimacy in marriage. Welcome to the show. I'm so delighted to have you here and to speak about the 6 pillars of intimacy, which was created by you and your husband, Tony, and provides a comprehensive framework for couples. So first, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's a pleasure. Now, can you share your insights on how emotional intimacy, particularly breaking cycles of conflict and improving communication, can contribute to strengthening the overall connection in a marriage?
Absolutely. You know, when you think about conflict, so often couples get into repeated patterns where you almost roll your eyes when the conversation starts because you're both thinking, we know how this is going to go. But when couples really get into a place of identifying what their conflict cycle is and looking for ways to interrupt it, that interruption, that we can do this as a team, leads them to be able to have deeper intimacy because it rewires their brain to go, we're in this together instead of fighting against each other.
So how did you come to that through your own relationship and your own marriage? How did you realize that, hey, wait a minute, this conflict is, you know, short-circuiting our desire?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Tony and I have been married for 27 years now, and the first 10, 11, 12 years, we found ourselves in these repeated conflicts, often around sexual intimacy. We didn't know how to talk about it. We would retreat to behaviors that we had witnessed growing up. And it was, as you mentioned in the intro, our 60-day sex challenge that really began to refocus our attention on why we do what we do and what the causes were behind it to say, hey, just because we've always done things this way doesn't mean it's working for us, and likely there's a better way to do it.
So let me ask you this, because as a sex therapist and working with couples so many years and hearing all the issues that come up, you know, a lot of times, for a lot of people, inevitably it's frequency. For other people, it's preferences, you know, on top, on bottom. It's oral sex, it's not oral sex. What can you share what you both were, you know, sort of struggling with and what was not working and how you came up with, all right, let's do 6 days, let's do a challenge and see how we can transform it?
We were one of those couples that had a lot of issues around frequency and variety. I think you used the word preferences. And a big part of that was the fact that nobody, I won't say nobody, but most people aren't taught how to talk about sex in a relationship. And so we simply didn't know what we didn't know. Getting to a place where, you know, Tony even threw out the idea of the 60-day challenge actually came as a result of many, many years of being rejected sexually, where I would be like, I'm not in the mood, or I have a headache, or I'm tired. And it was really his last-ditch effort to see if he could even get me to move. And I like to call it my come-to-Jesus moment, where I'm like, oh, if I don't move on this, there was a very real sense that if I didn't consider his needs and what was going on in our marriage, that our marriage was going to end. And so it was stepping into that place of saying, how do we get focused on this so that, most importantly, we refocus ourselves on our marriage, because so many of those arguments actually are just people not feeling like they're a priority, like they can talk
right
about it, like their spouse actually sees them and desires them in the same way that they did when the two of them said, I do.
So let me ask you this. Did during those years when you were not as sexually responsive to Tony's desire and overtures, did you feel that he was okay with it, or, you know, a lot of times one person wants sex less than the other. I mean, you know, you just have a different desire level. And so you say no, no, no repeatedly, and the other person, you know, carries on or complains, and then eventually they just sort of stop, and they accept that, all right, you just don't want sex. And so there's a sort of quiet complacency. And then the person who has a lower desire level seems to think that everything is fine, everything's okay. Their partner's accepted it, there's no issues, they're not badgering them. And very often that becomes the, you know, sort of the driving force that leads the other person into infidelity or out of the marriage, as the case may be. But I'm curious, because you're so open and sharing, what was your take at the time? Did you feel like, all right, well, Tony gets it, he knows I have a headache, and that's the way it is tonight? Or was he constantly, you know, oh, come on, Lisa, can't we have sex?
I won't say he was constant about it. I mean, there were definitely seasons, and he's been very open about this even on our own podcast, where it was almost a test. Let me see how long I can go before Alisa initiates or before she even says anything. And I think the longest I ever went was about 60 days, maybe 75, before even being like, hey, are we doing this? I always knew there was an undercurrent, even though he wasn't asking, even though he wasn't, you know, he would say, okay, I knew that he wasn't happy with the situation, even though I was like, cool, I don't have to do anything tonight. I knew that it wasn't great, but I was, for a long time, I was okay with it, because I was just like, well, I don't want to. Like,
right.
You know. And it wasn't until we did our 60-day sex challenge where I really got to a place of understanding that all the times I said no and stepped into that place of rejecting him, that it was he felt the rejection, not, it wasn't about sex, it was about him feeling rejected.
Yeah, so that's two points that I want to speak to, because you're so astute in what you've captured. The first being that what Tony did is not unusual. So many people will do that. They'll lie next to their partner in this silent sort of stoic suffering, clocking. When are you going to notice that we haven't had sex? It's almost like it justifies finally they're being angry. So that's the first piece. What he did was really on point with what so many people do. The second piece is exactly what you're describing. It's not about the sex. It's about feeling valued and valuable. It's sexual self-esteem that I call it, sexual esteem. But people are so vulnerable. And when you reject your partner, it's like you're saying to them, I have no desire for you. You're worthless. I don't care about you. You're saying this whole list of treacherous, hurtful, negative, rejecting things. It's just not, I'm not in the mood. And the person who is rejected will reach a point where they say, I'm not going to initiate. If he or she doesn't initiate, that's it. And that's how you can go, like you guys did, 2 months. You know, couples that wind up in sexless marriages as a result because they wind up in a standoff. But hold, let's put a pin in this, because I want to hear more about your thoughts and the 60 day that you came up with. Test, but we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us at Let's Talk Sex here at HealthyLife.net.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person, Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed, so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares,
The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit drjanegreer.com. www.drjanegreer.com. Remember, media with integrity. www.healthylife.net.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Sex. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and I'm continuing my conversation with my guest, Elisa Dilberto, from One Extraordinary Marriage. And so we were talking about rejection and initiating and, how you launched the Let's Do This test. Was that Tony's last desperate bid? And how did he come up with it? And how did that translate into your six pillars of intimacy, and what are they? And there you go.
There you go.
I'll jump right in.
Well,
jump right in.
The 60-day sex challenge actually came out, gosh, it's probably about 15, 16 years ago. Tony and I were watching a clip on one of the morning talk shows that had mentioned these two couples that had done sex challenges in their marriage. One had gone 101 days. The other had, the wife had given her husband a year of sex for his 40th birthday. And in my husband's big vision, last-ditch effort, he said, we were getting ready to lead the 8-week small group at our church. He said, what if we did a 60-day sex challenge? It kind of match up with just the duration of time we're leading the small group. What do you think? And we were so dysfunctional, I immediately said no. I'm like, our kids are 2 and 5. I'm not having sex every day for 60 days. That's not happening. But the next morning, it really struck me. I had this come-to-Jesus moment, like I said, in my garage, with a basket full of laundry where the thought flew through my head, if you're not willing to try, then your marriage is over. All he's asking for is for you to make him a priority for 2 months. What do you got to lose?
Terrific. Talk about insight. That was real insight.
It was, and it's really interesting because so many people ask us about it, and yes, the sexual intimacy was the catalyst for that. It became something that we were focused on, and I liken it to actually being better than our honeymoon because we knew a whole lot more about each other, and the sex was amazing. And we rediscovered each other, over a decade into our marriage. But what really came out of that experience was the fact that, one, you can't have sex 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of what anybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there are so many other areas of your marriage that when it's strong and when you're focusing on it, you can have this really extraordinary relationship. And as we started to look at those areas, that's really what became the six pillars of intimacy, looking at these areas, these six key areas that a couple can identify and put language around in order to strengthen their marriage.
So let's talk about them. I think that sounds so wondrous and so meaningful and empowering for people if they understand it and it's simple that they can, just put it in play in their lives. Let's go right into what they are.
Absolutely. So the six pillars are emotional intimacy, and this is going to be your verbal and your nonverbal communication. Think about your tone of voice and the timing of your conversation, your body language, all of that. That's followed by your physical intimacy. And we very specifically separated out physical and sexual intimacy because physical is going to be your non-sexual touch. This is the hand-holding and the back rubs and the foot massages and that touch that just says, hey, I see you, and I want to physically connect with you. We follow that with financial intimacy. So this is talking all things money. It's talking everything from, going out to eat to having an estate plan and everything in between. Then you have spiritual intimacy. And what are those faith practices? How do the two of you talk about what's important to you, to each other spiritually? Number 5 is recreational intimacy, and this is what the two of you do for fun. So many couples, when they first start dating, do a whole lot of fun things, and then you talk to them 20, 30 years later, and they're like, yeah, we watch TV.
You're right. And argue over what they watch.
Right. Well, or they don't even argue about it. They've got two separate TVs, and they're not even sitting in the same room.
Right, exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And so the recreational intimacy is the doing and the fun. And then the sixth pillar is sexual intimacy. And we put that at the end because we said, hey, that's the one everybody expects us to lead with. But let's look at these other five key areas first. Because when those are all really strong and rocking, the sexual intimacy is phenomenal.
Absolutely. So let's circle back, because I'm particularly struck by emotional intimacy and, you know, what you're describing in it, you know, how you speak to each other, the way you are verbal with each other. And, of course, that resonates for me with couples in terms of the tone that you take and the tone of voice that you use. And I'm wondering if you've encountered this. I have so many couples that will say, like, I have couples that say, you know, I feel like you hate me. You know, the way that you talk to me, just the little petty things throughout the day. Can you take out the garbage? Did you get this? What about that? Asking about a kid. Whatever it is, people tend to talk with each other using a tone of annoyance or irritation or frustration or anger or blame or criticism. And so people say, well, I how can I feel intimate with you when you always got that tone? I had a couple that actually trashed each other because the one guy, he said, I don't take a tone. You're the one, you raise your voice immediately. And she said, well, I only raise my voice in reaction to you. So I said to both of them, just take your phones out, and every time one of you is raising your voice or the other one is, count it.
Oh.
And they were both astounded at how quickly each of them was triggered and how frequently their tone of voice went from caring and loving to hostile and hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you encourage couples to be mindful of their tone, or even more so, to manage their irritation, annoyance, and frustration so that it isn't reflected in the way they talk to one another?
Well, I think a big part of what you've just described there, and that's such a powerful exercise, I can see couples really being blown away, one, by being aware of it, and two, seeing how many tally marks they've got in that counting exercise. But I think a big part of that is addressing what are the hurts that have been unresolved that either spouse is holding on to that literally becomes kind of that wound that just has a Band-Aid on it. And so in that tone of voice, it just, like, slaps the wound and it hurts again. And getting into
right.
a place of saying, you know, we need to address where we've hurt one another and heal so that we can soften our tone, so that we're not trying to force a softer tone or a kinder word when we're not feeling it, because there's unresolved issues that still have to be dealt with. It's kind of like trying to put, what's that expression, trying to put makeup on a pig. You know, you can't do it if you haven't, it's not going to work. The pig's still going to be ugly. And the same is true in our marriage. If we're just trying to put a nice word on things when we haven't dealt with what's making us feel ugly or irritated and frustrated or annoyed, we're just putting makeup on a pig.
Right. So what you're saying really is that probably if you or your partner are short-tempered, quick to, you know, anger, irritation, that there may, in fact, it may be a barometer that there is an unresolved issue, a conflict that one of you is holding on to and is angry, and it's getting attached to all this other little petty stuff. Did you notice that when you and Tony were, you know, dealing with the sex not being exactly where he wanted it to be, was he more impatient with you, or shorter, or more critical or blaming in other areas? Did it get attached to other things?
Oh, yeah. We were snippy with each other. I still have this very vivid memory of him coming up behind me and just touching me. And me, like, it was the ugliest face. I'm so glad my back was to him, because I can just see my eye roll and just feel the huge sigh roll through my body, because I'm just like, oh, stop touching me. And the kind of responses that I would give him, because I was, like, everything was an annoyance, because this was an unresolved issue in our marriage.
Terrific. Well, I'm so glad that it became not only a resolved issue, but the sexual intimacy, the 60 days of sex challenge that played such a pivotal role in your own marriage, and that you're able to share with other people so that they too can pay attention, wake up to dormancy in their sexual relationship and other facets of it to make it the best that it can possibly be. So Thank you, Lisa, so much for such an informative conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Absolutely. And you can learn more about the six pillars of intimacy and One Extraordinary Marriage at OneExtraordinaryMarriage.com. And be sure to follow Elisa and Tony on Instagram, One Extraordinary Marriage. When we come back, it's time for Shriek Wrap, so stick around.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person. Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed, so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares, The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer, gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit drjanegreer.com, www.drjanegreer.com. How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you are trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then how could you do this to me and what about me are the titles of 2 separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me? Or What About Me? By Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome to the Shrink Wrap segment of the Doctor on Call Let's Talk Sex Show, where it is all about what we can learn from the trials and triumphs of not only celebrities, but all relationships. The celebrity stars shine so brightly, and we all look up to them, yet we're puzzled when they fall. So Shrink Wrap is here to shed light on all. And joining me once more with feeling today is Jay Cruz. Jay has an extensive background and experience as a broadcasting professional, and he's used his experience to help produce, coach, and further the positive vision of Healthy Life Radio and its numerous shows. So, Jay, today we've got an interesting scoop on Gisele Bündchen, who is shedding light on the complexities of her marriage with Tom Brady. And I really like this because we were just talking about, you know, with our guests, marriage is not all about sex. Marriage is not all about passion. Marriage is about all these different layers and being able to find that middle ground. So she said in a Vanity Fair cover story, she compared the end of their union to a death and a rebirth. And she wants to set the record straight because she said, contrary to rumors that she sought a divorce because Tom Brady was returning to football from another season, she said that there's much more to the story than what meets the eye. So, yeah, because that makes a lot of sense. It's so easy for the news to say, oh, he went back into football and she got mad and she left. But marriages don't just end because one person goes off and does something the other person doesn't want them to do. There's usually a long, smoldering resentment that builds over time and, you know, suddenly reaches a breaking point. And, you know, when she talks about their differences, to me it sounds like his playing football may have just impacted on their lives and what they could do in their lives as a couple because of how much time was consumed for him pursuing his passion. You know, very much like an executive who is always at the office, you know, that's his job, that's his work, that's his passion, but that then impacts on his availability to be involved with his family. We hear that with a lot with the actors who on their second marriages will say, well, now I can have the children and pay attention and be involved in the family life that I couldn't do when I was starting out and I was struggling. So what do you make of it?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all, Dr. Jane. And
always a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And, you know, Giselle and Tom, that was that was an interesting, very public, you know, type of marriage with all the details of a power couple. You know, in some ways, whatever was worked out between them, you know, he continued his career. And, you know, whether I just don't see her. I don't follow her modeling or fashion photos like I follow football, just because it's...
Right, well, you're the football guy.
Yeah, but, you know, there's... You know, I was watching this series on Netflix called Quarterbacks, and Tom Brady's not in it, but they're showing, you know, a number of the guy, three guys in the league that followed him during last football season, the one before this. And, you know, there was one episode that was purely on the training and rehab they do during the season just to physically get ready for the game. And the one guy, Patrick Mahomes, his trainer, it was insane. I'm like, I don't know how how he can do this and then go home and be a husband, wife, or what, you know, husband and father or whatever. It takes up a lot of time, a lot of dedication, and, you know, it is, you know, not your standard 9-to-5 job, but besides the, you know, the games and the preparation, there's preparation during the off season. There's a lot of film study to be at the top. You know, you can casually show up, play the game, look at some film while you're at the facility and go live your life. But, you know, folks like Tom Brady, super dedicated. He's the all-time winningest Super Bowl quarterback and in the argument for, you know, the GOAT, greatest of all time. To be great at something, you have to sacrifice something else. And oftentimes, it might be
right.
Availability
well
as a husband or father in a marriage or family.
Well said. Well, now let's just jump ship and go right to Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
Sure.
Because therein lies a perfect example of how they are already having to navigate the demands of both of their careers because he couldn't join her at the Grammys because he has to get ready for the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's interesting. I wonder if, because Giselle certainly had her livelihood and was renowned as a model and had the demands of her schedule, so you would have thought that it kind of would have balanced Tom Brady's having to be immersed in football, that it would have balanced the demands of their lives. So but it didn't, because it seems that the football did become him.
And it appears that Dr. Jane's phone has dropped off, unfortunately. We'll have to wait for her to call back as we're talking on shrink wrap. And just one second.
Okay, so I think we dropped the ball for a moment, but it certainly becomes what happens in these relationships that the ball does get dropped, because what Giselle said was she expected her life and marriage to go in a very different way, and she had the dreams and the vision, and it didn't. And, you know, there's the disappointment because you don't really understand or necessarily appreciate the full demands that one person's career and what they are going to have to invest in it can take, the toll it can take on the relationship and or marriage. So it'll be very interesting to see how, you know, Taylor and Travis evolve over the course of time if they go the distance. Because they seem to both have such big careers that, you know, demand from each of them to be immersed in their own lives separate and thereby to be able to tolerate the expectations and the unavailability that come with, you know, with being a superstar.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, she supposedly will be flying from Tokyo to attend the game this Sunday. And, you know, that's quite a commitment. You know, as far as, you know, Travis not being able to join her because of the Super Bowl, it's kind of a privilege in the Super Bowl. And Tom Brady, a little bit on him also, you know, he played in and won more Super Bowls than any other, you know, player in history. And he's a tightly wound guy. In fact, you know, he comes across as just this, you know, very nice person. But there's many times when in defeat, you know, he didn't exactly exemplify the best sportsmanship in the basic of shaking the hand of opponent. Many times after a defeat in a big game, he just walked off the field. So he was super competitive more than most in a very competitive field. So could have been something with that that, you know, did go over into their marriage. But, you know, and it's interesting with Taylor and Travis, because I'd like to see what happens, you know, if she's still coming to games next year. I hope they make it. I do hope they make it, because, you know, after this Sunday, his season's over. They'll either win or lose, and either way, there'll be a decompress after the season, probably a little bit of, you know, letting loose, a little bit of partying, and then, you know, he'll probably be going on tour with her and acting as an extra security guard for all I know. He seems to want to be involved with her life, so that's a great sign.
Well, I'm with you. I am so rooting for the two of them because, you know, Miss Americana, she's the prom queen, he's the football star. You know, he holds his own, and he can hold his own with her, and it's like, you know, this fabulous romance, and they seem to be so perfectly made for each other and hopefully understand enough about, like we were talking, the demands, the intensity of their respective careers to be able to be supportive and allow for and make room for without it taking a toll on the relationship. Kind of like Carrie Underwood and, do you know her husband? He was an athlete as well, a hockey player. I don't remember his name now, but you know, you see these relationships where the women both are superstars and the men have their careers, and being able to navigate it down the road to keep the marriage strong and healthy, like we've been talking about.
Absolutely. And not to add more topic fuel to the fire, but there's another special on Netflix. Not that I'm promoting that network, because they just busted me for password sharing, actually, so I'm a little upset. Anyway, besides that, there's a show featuring David Beckham, the world-famous soccer player. And when he got together with Victoria, a.k.a. Posh Spice,
it
was not so affected here in the United States because, you know, they're English and we don't follow them that much. However, they were kind of household names, and in England, they couldn't move a muscle without the press down there. You know, every opinion came out during their time together, and it became brutal where, you know, David was happy to go play in Spain and left, you know, the club that he had grown up playing for. So that's an interesting thing that, you know, happened many years ago, and it's kind of repeating a little bit with Taylor and Travis. But thanks for having me on today, Dr. Jane. I think we're out of time for this segment and today's show.
Well, I must say it's always a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to you joining me for next month. And everybody as well, join me next month for a new episode of the Doctor on Call Hour with more fabulous guests. Be sure to visit me online at www.drjanegreer.com, and make sure to check out my website where you can get my book, How to Overcome Denial. Am I Lying to Myself? Oh my goodness. Are you lying to yourself? Am I Lying to Myself? How to Overcome Denial and See the Truth. It's available on Amazon, and also follow me online at www.drjanegreer.com for relationship tips and advice. Thanks for listening, everyone, and remember, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.